The thing leaped over a fallen tree straight at Rihanna. It was enormous. Sharp, branched horns topped its narrow head. Rock-like hooves kicked the air with every bound.
Dragon!
Jig cowered by the tree. Rihanna ducked, and the thing sprang right over her and disappeared.
Are you okay? Well, we should get back in case there are more of those things.
Jig, it was a deer, not a dragon. And I hope there are more. I haven't eaten venison in years.
I didn't see it that well. I panicked.
Jig, don't worry. Deer are the biggest cowards out there, and they only eat plants, not goblins. Oh, come on. He was probably rubbing the velvet off his antlers. I'll show you.
Jig gathered up his wood and followed. Sure enough, they found a tree whose bark showed long gouges. Other places had been polished smooth by the deer's antlers.
Alchemists sometimes collect deer velvet. They use it for an aphrodisiac.
Rihanna, are deer stupid?
I don't think so. But I've never lived in the woods. Why?
Well, the deer couldn't have heard us at first. Otherwise, if they're as timid as you say, it would have fled. But he came toward us. Which means something else must have scared it even more.
You're right.
Indeed you are.
Risland!
Risland stepped out from behind a large tree. His bonds were gone, as was his bow. To anyone who hadn't seen the charred corpses left by Risland's magic, he looked like a harmless man with odd taste in tattoos.
How did you escape?
My brother ordered my hands and feet tied again after you left. I lay there in silence until their attention wandered. Barius and Darnak are naive. They know nothing of true magic, or those who use it, so they believed I was helpless.
Risland reached into his robes and flourished a short knife. The single-edged blade curved forward like a sickle, and the handle was black bone.
All that work to prevent me from spellcasting, and they never searched for weapons.
You killed them?
No. I considered it, but he is still my brother.
The knife vanished into the shadows of his robe.
I put them both to sleep. They will rest safely until the spell wears off, sometime tomorrow afternoon, or until someone disturbs the glyphs.
Safe? What if another ogre comes?
I imagine even the thick-skulled ogres have learned to leave us alone. If not, the lesson will be repeated.
You know what killed the other ogres.
I know much more than you or my brother ever realized, little goblin.
You're going after the rod, aren't you?
Barius would take the rod back to our father. Oh, he would receive everything he had ever hoped for. There would be celebration with dancing and musicians and all the glory Barius wanted, until the next morning when the people's attention turned elsewhere and left him more bitter and empty than before. In the meantime, the rod would be tucked into some vault and left to gather dust, locked away as if it were naught but a mere trinket. My brother is like a crow who steals a gold necklace for its pretty sparkle, with no understanding of its real value. Much as I hate to snatch the necklace from my brother's beak, I think I can find a better use for its power.
Risland pointed a finger at one of the trees. The tattoos on his hand pulsed once, and a thick branch began to twist like a serpent. Small twigs fell from the main branch, and the bark peeled away like dead skin. The smooth branch tumbled free and flew to Risland's hand. He brushed a few last flakes of bark off of the pale staff.
If you are wise, you will leave.
How? Are we supposed to fly out of here?
Watch.
Risland grabbed one of the smaller sticks. He threw the stick into the air. It whirled end over end for 20 feet, then shot back to earth. Jig heard nothing, but it appeared as though the stick had collided with something solid. It landed somewhere to their left. Jig stared.
What you see is the stick hitting the roof of the cavern.
What cavern?
And you killed the necromancer? Did you really believe an entire sky existed beneath the mountain? That those clouds are real? You fell less than 30 feet, yet you accept the existence of those birds soaring hundreds of feet in the air. It's illusion. All of it. A powerful illusion, but no more. Which means the pit we came through is still there, if you have wit enough to find it again. If not...
Risland stabbed the end of his staff into the dirt. Before Jig could work up the courage to ask more questions, Risland walked off into the woods. Jig rubbed his eyes and wished for a set of those elven lenses Rihanna had mentioned, for it looked like Ryslin's feet passed through the roots that had snagged Jig's boots time after time. He wondered if Shadowstar could provide the same magic for Jig.
We should stop him.
Why? I say we go find the way out.
So we make our way to the necromancer's little throne room. Well, then?
Jig started to answer, then remembered. Ryslind was the only one who could get them past the lizard fish, which Ryslind knew perfectly well.
Okay, so he's still playing with us. What's your plan for stopping him?
We could sneak up on him. Like Darnik told us against a wizard, we just have to be fast enough to kill him before he can cast a spell.
But this is Ryslind!
Why are you so frightened of him? Everyone dies sooner or later. If you stab him in the heart, he'll die like everyone else.
Not everyone dies. Some of them turn into walking corpses.
Jig, stop being such a coward. You killed the necromancer, right?
I was lucky.
Lucky or not, you did it. There's two of us. If we don't kill him, who knows what'll do? He's only human, right?
No. Haven't you listened to his voice? Whatever he is, he's not like any human I've heard.
Jig told her how the second voice had taken control back in the necromancer's chamber.
Even Barius was afraid of him.
I hate bullies. He and his brother both. They expect you to do everything they want, and if you don't, they threaten you.
Besides, if we kill him, how are we supposed to get through the lake?
We should go back.
Jig started forward. After a few paces, Rihanna followed. Jig looked around nervously. The sunlight was mostly gone, and the stars had begun to appear in the sky. Jig had never seen stars, but he found them a disappointment. The songs described them as pretty, but all he saw were weak dots of white light. They provided little light. Stars might be fine for surface dwellers, he decided, but he'd trade them all to have the sun back. Rihanna eventually passed Jig, which was fine with him. If she could find the way back to their camp, he would happily let her lead the way.
They're going to kill you, you know.
Who are?
Barius and Darnik. They'll kill you as soon as they don't need you anymore. If I'm lucky, they'll toss me in a prison. What do you expect? You're a goblin. I'm a thief. They're not going to let us go once they find the rod and escape.
Darnik wouldn't.
Everywhere I go, I meet men like him. Follow them into Strahm's lair or let them toss me in the dungeons. They offer you a choice between hells and expect you to thank them for it.
They were going to kill you.
What?
Before, when you set off the necromancer's trap, they were going to kill you to keep you from turning into one of those dead things.
He would have too. Bastard. We should let them sleep and hope the ogres do find them. I'll kill them ourselves. They deserve it. Maybe we can kick them around a bit before we break the spell.
I could use a knife and Darnik's ink to draw some rude tattoos. What do you think Barius's father would say if he came home with Goblin Lover scrawled across his forehead?
Or we could steal their clothes, make them face Strahm naked. Except that I don't really want to see that. I'm going to have enough nightmares about this place without those images haunting me.
If we were back in goblin territory, we could rub their clothes in carrion worm urine. That way, they'd wake up surrounded by worms.
And if we were on the surface, I'd boil some tea from poison ivy leaves and slip it into their water skins. You should have warned me before you cut off my finger.
Sorry, I'll say something next time.
Next time, I'll cut off something of yours in return, and it won't be a finger.
A few hours later, after backtracking twice, they managed to find Barius and Darnak. They lay as if dead, hands folded on their stomachs and their equipment placed to one side. The lantern, lit but shuttered, sat between them. Indeed, it was the faint orange lantern light that Rihanna had spotted to guide them here. Jig opened the lantern. He could see again, as well as he ever did, at least. Rihanna pointed at Barius's face.
Ryslin's glyphs.
Two red lines traced a circular path around his forehead, starting at the eyebrows and merging by the bridge of his nose. Darnak had the same character inked onto his brow, though they had to shove his hair out of the way to see it.
Ryslin said we could wake them up by breaking the glyph. I'll do it. You take the lantern and make sure nothing's out there.
Why me?
Don't argue, Jig.
Rihanna's knife appeared in her hand. Jig picked up the lantern and walked a few paces into the woods.
And she was complaining about bullies.
He shone the light around. Had Jig stopped to think, he might have run the other way, into the darkness. Instead, he hurried back to the others, to find Darnak and Barius both awake and staring at something in the prince's hand. No, not in his hand. Rihanna sat on the ground in front of them both.
Ryslund cast a spell on you and escaped. He wants the rod for himself. He said we should leave. We came back as soon as we could. He said something about a spell that would let him look like you, Barius, to fool your father. I'm afraid that, for one of the spell ingredients, he had to cut off your finger.
I'll slay him myself!
Barius thrust the newly healed stump of his left ring finger in Darnak's face.
Once we're home, I'll take you to one of the healing temples. You've more than enough gold sitting around to buy a simple regeneration. Besides, if he was wanting to finish you off, he'd have slit your throat rather than lay you out with a magic lullaby. If it was your brother who was doing this, that is.
Of course it was him. Fearful of my success, he seeks to steal the rod which is rightfully mine.
Jig didn't say anything. Darnak had so far kept his suspicions to himself, and Jig didn't want to draw any attention he could avoid. At least Rihanna had the foresight to dispose of the finger. She had flung it far into the woods, then wiped her knife on the prince's white shirt.
We should be off. We've no time for slumber. If we're to catch my treacherous brother, we must leave at once.
Before you're running too far, you might want to ask which way your brother was headed.
Jig pointed. Barius straightened his shoulders and, refusing to make eye contact with Jig, turned and walked the way Jig had indicated.
Come on, then. He'll be setting quite a trot until he burns off the worst of his temper.
Darnak grabbed the lantern in one hand, hoisted his pack with the other, and followed. Jig half-jogged alongside the dwarf. Rihanna quickly followed the others.
Are you sure we should go after Ryslund in the dark? If we wait until the sun comes back... It does come back, doesn't it?
Aye, and I could do with a long non-magical nap myself. But yon hothead won't rest until he gets back at his brother, and if he has to, he'll rip off his own eyelids to keep from sleeping.
Even though he knows Ryslund isn't right in the head?
Madmen in the noble line are as common as rat turds in the grain shed. Barius couldn't care less about his brother's sanity. He doesn't care why Ryslund showed him up. He just knows he's been made to look the fool. If it happens again, Barius won't stop until one or the other is dead. I expect it will be Barius who finds himself wearing a funeral shroud. A good fighter, but too impetuous. And Ryslund's power is nothing to sneer at. Yeah, enough talk. How many paces since their forked tree?
This is where you met the traitor?
Jig looked around. There was his firewood scattered and forgotten. To the right, a pale round wound on a tree marked where Ryslund had torn his staff free.
Yes.
His sandals are smooth-soled, harder to track. But I see that he stood here while talking to you. Darnak, bring the light closer.
Darnak drew a quick X and labeled it Ryslund, then hurried over to Barius's side.
There. That shallow dimple in the earth. That must be the indentation from his staff. Between his footprints and that staff, we can track him even in this black night. My poor brother. Strong in art, but weak in flesh. He could never outmarch me in the field, even with a staff to support his weight.
They continued through the woods until Jig lost track of time. All he wanted was to lie down. Surely they had been walking for days.
Strange. The traitor fled in a different direction than the creature I had been tracking. Yet another indication that he knows something he refused to share. He divined the necromancer's hiding place. Could he be strong enough to discover the rod's location as well? The tales say it hides itself from magic, but why else would he go this way if not to reach the rod before me?
Wait, who found the necromancer?
No doubt Barius had already rewritten that incident in his memory, erasing Jig's role so he wouldn't have to admit to being upstaged by a goblin. Near morning, the forest began to thin. The light had come so gradually, Jig couldn't say when he first began to see the faint grey outlines of the trees. Overhead, the stars had faded until only a few faint spots of light still showed. Barius brought them to a halt at the edge of the woods.
Look!
Jig stumbled forward to see what Barius had pointed to. He tried to rub the sleepiness from his eyes. One part of him knew he wasn't imagining things, but another part knew equally well that he couldn't be seeing what his eyes told him was there.
Oh, do all dragons own flower gardens?
First I've run across.
It was an impressive garden, Jig admitted. He sat down and tried to take it all in. The cavern ended about a quarter mile away. The bowl-shaped wall rose about 30 feet to end at a tree-covered cliff. Large birds circled the clifftop. Thin snakes of water flowed down the cavern wall. Midway down, they hit a magical barrier and flowed into the air, where they curved around one another and looped back to form an arched overhang. It was like fine lace, but formed entirely of water. Streams split apart and split again. The patterns changed gradually, a row of intricate diamonds fading into a series of interlinked ovals, all formed by those shifting rays of water. Accenting the magical overhang were numerous vines that blanketed the wall. Their purple flowers hid the rock so well, Jig wouldn't have been surprised to learn that the cliff itself was nothing more than flower petals. The wind created waves of motion across the flowers, reminding Jig of the lake. The true work of art was at ground level, where a huge flower mural stretched out for at least 100 yards from the cliff. Jig couldn't see well enough to discern the finer details, but he could tell the pictures were laid out to tell a story. On the left, a large green dragon flew with wings outstretched. Orange and red flowers created flaming breath. Another area seemed to depict the outside of the mountain. Jig wondered where Straum had found gray and brown flowers for that part of the mural. A narrow white trail wound through the center of the garden to the cavern wall. There, about 10 feet up, a wide hole beckoned. Jig hadn't seen it at first because some of the vines hung over the entrance like a curtain. That had to be the entrance to Straum's lair.
The opening is off the ground and wide enough for the dragon to fly through unimpeded. We should prepare ourselves. Come, before the sun finishes rising.
Drawing his sword, the prince hurried toward the garden. Jig waited. He wanted to make sure nothing was waiting to leap out and kill whoever went first. Or if something did kill the prince, Jig wanted to be sure he was nowhere near when it happened. But Barius made it to the edge of the mural without incident. And then Darnak's club prodded Jig in the back, and he followed. At the garden, Jig saw something he had missed before. A tiny wall of blue fire bordered the entire mural. In the red light of sunrise, the points of flame were almost invisible. The fire also segmented different portions of the mural. Over here, wizards dueled at the gates of a black tower. Another image showed a blue-scaled dragon flying through the clouds. He remembered Rysland explaining the legend of Elnoraine and wondered if the mural was supposed to depict a battle from those times. Jig grinned when he spotted something tucked into one corner. In a tiny triangular panel, a squad of goblins fought a cat-like creature. Naturally, the goblins were losing, but Jig didn't care. He felt a surge of pride at seeing his people in Straum's garden. It made him feel like he was a part of history.
Come on. Once we reach Straum's hoard, you'll see something worth gawking at.
The path through the garden was actually a sort of white grass, so low and soft it felt like feathers beneath Jig's feet. As they neared the cave, Jig began to wonder why they hadn't been attacked yet. Surely if Straum's magic could create water sculpture and flower art like this, he would have no trouble adding a few spells to discourage intruders. Barius was so obsessed with his brother that he hadn't bothered to look for traps along the path. At least Barius was in the lead, so if anything did happen, Jig would have the satisfaction of seeing it happen to him first. Despite his worries, they reached the wall of the cavern. There, Darnak took a rope from his pack and handed it to Rihanna, the lightest in the group. She raised both eyebrows and handed the rope right back.
Stick my head up there and let Strom burn it off. I think not.
My brother is up there, girl.
Barius pointed to an indentation in the grass, one that could have been made by the end of a staff.
I've defeated every foe and every trap we have encountered, and I'll not be stopped by your stubbornness.
I'll do it.
Jig grabbed the rope from Darnak.
Boost me up.
As he scrambled onto the dwarf's shoulders, Jig wondered what had possessed him.
Goblins are cowards. That's what helps us to survive. So what am I doing poking my head into a dragon's cave? That's simple. I'm hungry, I'm tired, and I don't feel like waiting while they argue for the next hour. Perhaps courage is nothing more than impatience.
His fingers caught the edge. With some pushing from Darnak and Barius, he managed to swing one leg up. Pain tore through a very sensitive part of his anatomy. He pulled the other leg up quickly. Jig rolled into the cave, tumbled over several of the flower vines, and spent the next minute untangling himself from a vine that had been torn free and wrapped around his legs. The others waited below to see if he would die a hideous death. Looking around, Jig wondered the same thing. Two trolls lay dead on the tunnel floor. Wisps of smoke rose from the holes in their chests. Barius was right. His brother had been here. If anything, trolls were even bigger than the ogres had been. Uglier, too. They looked like a cross between giant humans and spoiled apples. Their bald skin was wrinkled and rubbery. They smelled of charred flesh, but that was a result of Ryslin's magic. Jig kicked them both to be sure they were dead. The trolls didn't respond, though a few flies flew up from the eyes of the closest one.
Yeah!
Smudge leaped off Jig's shoulder. His legs snapped out in midair, and when he landed on the troll's forehead, he held a fly between his forelegs. Jig watched jealously as Smudge cooked his breakfast.
What's taking you so long up there?
I was looking for something to tie the rope to. I'm not big enough to pull you up by myself.
Jig scanned the entrance. No stalagmites, no rocks, nothing that would hold the rope. His gaze returned to the trolls. They were pretty big. He wound the rope around both trolls' waists, thinking that dead trolls had turned out to be pretty useful things. He wondered if Golaka had ever cooked troll meat. He'd have to see about bringing some back for her cauldron, if he survived long enough. Jig poked his head through the vine curtain.
Ready!
Pulling back, Jig braced himself against the trolls, adding his meager weight to theirs. Barius came up first. He was followed in quick succession by Rihanna. Finally, Darnak struggled over the ledge and through the vines. The dwarf quickly lit the lantern and retrieved his map-making tools. As Jig retrieved the rope, Darnak was happily pacing off the width of the tunnel.
3, 24, 25. Ha! Now this is a proper dragon's lair. Much more to my liking. 25 paces exactly. Figure 3 or 4 paces for clearance, but that still means a pretty good wingspan on the beast.
The tunnel was wide, but the roof was only a few feet higher than Barius's head. If Straum decided to come out for an early morning flight, there was no place for the group to hide. Indeed, they'd be lucky if the dragon didn't smash them on his way out.
Quickly! My brother cannot be far. We've outmarched him, and soon he will be back within our grasp. And he has kindly led me to Strom's hoard. For that boon, perhaps I shall be lenient.
Should I stay here to watch the entrance, to make sure nothing follows? It's not as though I'd be much use against the dragon.
You will remain with us, if nothing else. Perhaps the dragon will waste valuable seconds on you, giving us time to execute our attack. Therein lies your usefulness, Goblin.
After that, Jig was too depressed to say anything else. The tunnels grew warmer as they walked. A creature that breathed fire would probably want to keep its home as warm as possible. Dragons were supposed to have great piles of treasure that they used as nests. Uncomfortable as it sounded, it did make a kind of sense. Perhaps dragons followed the same logic Jig used when he slept with his few belongings clutched to his stomach. People had a harder time stealing something in your sleep if they had to roll you over to get it.
I see something.
Darnak raised the lantern and aimed the beam forward. Soon Jig could see it too, a faint blue glow from farther up the tunnel. At a nod from Barius, Darnak shuttered the lantern. Jig's eyes were slow to adjust, but his ears made up for that. As they neared the source of the light, his vision improved as well. A wide portcullis blocked the end of the tunnel. Black bars as thick as his wrist extended from the ceiling into holes in the floor. Flat iron bands ran across the bars, riveted to hold each bar in place. The bars ended in nasty-looking points, like oversized spearheads lodged several inches in the rock.
Behold, the very resting place of the beast.
Jig moved closer to peer through the bars. Beyond the portcullis, the tunnel opened into a large cavern. A glassy lake filled the far half of the cavern, and the water moved just enough to make small waves on the shore. The lake was small, more of a pond, especially compared to the Lake of the Lizardfish. The shore itself was black sand that stretched almost to the tunnel. The sand sparkled like the night sky, illuminated by blue flames around the edge of the cavern, similar to the fire that had bordered the flower mosaic. Turning his attention to the cavern walls, Jig felt his mouth open in awe. Shelves had been carved into every square inch of the wall, and every shelf overflowed with stuff. Jig had a hard time calling it treasure. True, many shelves glittered with gold and silver coins of all shapes and sizes, stacked into perfect cylinders. But there was far more to Straum's hoard than mere money. Weapons played a prominent role in the decor. Swords hung between every shelf, some taller than Jig, others slender as a blade of grass. Jig saw jeweled swords, plain swords, swords with polished steel blades, and swords of hammered bronze. He even saw one that looked like it was made of glass. No surprise that the owner of that sword didn't last long. Another shelf was devoted to footwear. Most came in pairs, but here and there Jig saw a lone boot or sandal. For the first time, he understood a little of Barius's greed. If not for the portcullis, Jig would have run to the shelves and grabbed every pair he could find. Never again would he have to suffer bruised toes, blistered heels, or cracked toenails. He wondered if he would have time to search for at least one pair that fit better. Maybe those blue ones with the furry white fringe at the top and red flames painted down the sides. That was the kind of dramatic style any goblin would kill for. There were helmets and bows, books and gemstones, even a long shelf devoted to what Jig took to be feathers, but Darnak quickly recognized as writing quills.
What a load of junk! Aside from the gold, that is. And I could take a liking to that peacock quill there. Could draw some fine maps with that. I wonder what kind of nib she's got on her.
Find the rod! Once the rod is safely in our possession, you may help yourself to any booty you wish. But first, find the rod.
What does it look like? You don't know?
The rod was hidden here thousands of years ago. No man has seen it since, and the bards of old did not see fit to describe it in poem. I presumed my brother would be able to identify it through his art.
I've spotted a mess of quarterstaves there by the waterline. Could your rod be mixed in with that bunch for camouflage?
Our course is simple. We must search the dragon's lair before it returns.
Barius looked up and down at the portcullis, clearly offended that someone had dared impede his quest with such a mundane obstacle. As they waited for him to speak again, it became equally clear that he had no idea how to get past it. Darnak grabbed one of the bars and gave it a tug. Pressing the side of his face to the gate, he stared up into the ceiling, where presumably the portcullis went when raised.
I'm not seeing any chains or gears up there. Mechanism must be on the other side.
Are we sure there's nobody in there?
I will not be stopped by iron bars, not when I'm so close. Darnak, open the gate.
Perhaps I can assist you, brother.
Barius lunged at the gate as his brother stepped into view.
Traitor! Not even father will raise a hand against me for taking your life. Not after this.
Barius shoved his crippled left hand through the bars. Rysland frowned. Mind damaged or not, he had to know he wasn't responsible for his brother's injury. Jig tried to think of something to say, some way to distract them both. Rihanna beat him to it.
He's inside the lair. Ryson must have been the one to lower the bars.
Indeed. That makes sense. You may have beaten us to the treasure, but you'll not leave this place without defeating us. Hide behind this gate for as long as you want. You cannot wait forever.
Such an abrasive manner, brother. In truth, I did not close the gate, but I believe I can assist you nonetheless.
Ryslind grabbed two of the bars. He closed his eyes. Jig could see the red glow of his eyes even through the lids. As though Ryslin's magic was a kind of polishing agent, the iron bars began to gleam. Small ripples spread along the two bars he held. Ryslind released his grip. Smiling at the group, he reached between the center bars and tapped each one lightly. Like the streams of water outside, the bars turned fluid and moved toward the edge of the tunnel. The flat iron crossbeams trickled to the floor. Soon, instead of an impassable gate, only a ring of black liquid ran around the end of the tunnel.
Illusion. To stop the weak-minded.
Steel. To stop the craven of heart.
Oh, my brother, so bold yet so predictable.
Ryslin's eyes flashed. The blade of Barius's sword vanished at the crossguard. Barius dropped the useless hilt.
You've always been a coward.
And you've never learned to compromise. It's why even the goblin beat you at your duel. Your honor and nobility are chains holding you back. Had the goblin offended me, I would have crushed him. The poor wretch would die as quickly as I would were I to meet your challenge honorably, sword against sword. But you seem to lack your sword, brother. Here, take this instead.
Ryslind tossed a knife to Barius. Halfway between them, it twisted into a snake. Darnak's war club knocked it aside before it could strike. The snake bounced off the tunnel wall and fell to the ground, where it became a dagger again. Barius grabbed for the dagger.
Darnak, help me fight this foul magic!
No, I can't be doing that, Barius. I've served your father for longer than you've been alive. I'll not tell him how I was after killing one of his sons. And if you've any brains at all between the two of you, you'll stop this nonsense. We may have found the ore, but we've yet to haul it from the mine, as the saying goes.
Jig stared at the lake, noting the low shadow that broke up the reflections on the surface. It moved toward the shore, growing more distinct as it neared the sand. Ripples spread out from the disturbance. A head rose out of the water.
Dragon!
Barius, still searching for an opening against his brother, hadn't noticed yet. But Darnak did, and his head jerked up as he spotted the dragon sliding out of the water.
Oh, now there's something I could be pummeling on. Solve your problems quickly, boys. I'm off to tenderize myself some dragon steak.
We shall resolve this at a later time. For now, there is a common foe to slay.
Twirling his club over his head, Darnak charged into the room toward the dripping dragon. Barius followed close behind, his knife looking like a joke before the dragon's bulk. Jig glanced at Rihanna. Their eyes met, and they nodded in silent agreement. They ran back down the tunnel as fast as their feet could move.
A common foe to slay! Though maybe Strom will laugh himself to death when he sees Barius's weapon. I swear it's a wonder there are any humans left.
Jig saved his energy for running, not talking, and quickly passed Rihanna. However, he might have been better off to wait for Rihanna after all, or even to let her go first. That way, she would be the one to face the large figure silhouetted against the mouth of the tunnel. Jig clenched his teeth and ran faster, ignoring the cramps in his legs. Big creatures tended to be slow. If Jig was quick enough, maybe he could slip past the thing, whatever it was. He wasn't quick enough, nor was this big thing at all slow. A long arm snapped out and caught the back of his loincloth so fast that Jig never saw the movement. His rope belt bent him double and the arm lifted him effortlessly into the air. Jig grabbed at the creature, but it was awfully hard to get a good grip on something behind his back. He scraped the thing's wrist and felt scales, but he couldn't break free. Slowly, he found himself turned around to face the creature. When he saw what held him, he stopped struggling and concentrated on looking small and harmless. for now he knew what had killed the ogres. The thing stood a head shorter than an ogre, but Jig would have happily faced all three ogres by himself rather than fight this beast. Dark bronze scales the size of large coins covered most of its body, with lighter scales along the belly and chest. Its legs were jointed like an animal's, so it stood with its thighs hinged up close to the stomach. A long tail helped it balance. As Jig watched, the tail twitched back and forth, causing the barbs at the end to smash against the wall. The creature didn't seem to feel any pain from the impact. The head was a miniature version of the dragon's that Jig had seen coming out of the water, and he would have been happier had he never gotten the chance to examine it so closely. Curved white teeth lined its long, flat jaws. The eyes were golden with slitted pupils. Twin horns spiraled back from behind its small, tufted ears. Something tickled his back. Jig craned his head and saw Smudge hastening toward his belt pouch. Before, Smudge had fought like a cornered cat to avoid the pouch. Faced with this thing that had snagged Jig so easily, the fire spider had obviously decided that maybe the pouch wasn't as bad as he thought.
Don't struggle, little one. Once I have your friend, we'll be on our way back to Strahm.
I'm going to kill you, Jig! Leave me behind, will you?
Leanna, run!
Very well, the hard way.
The thing pulled Jig close against his body, and Jig felt the spring of powerful muscles as his captor leaped into the air. Clawed feet scraped across the wall and launched them another 20 feet down the tunnel, where he bounced onto the opposite wall. Three more bounds took them to where Rihanna stood, torn as to which way to run. The creature snagged Rihanna's tunic in his claws. He tucked Rihanna under his other arm and continued at a slower pace toward Strahm's lair.
I hate this place!
The creature dropped Jig and Rihanna in the sand. He was so confident he hadn't even bothered to take Jig's sword or Rihanna's knife. Not that it mattered. Rihanna had managed to squirm enough to slash at the creature's arm. Against those scales, she might as well have attacked the stone walls. Strahm's bronze body rested half-submerged in the lake. His front legs sank into the sand, and his long neck stretched just high enough to let him look down at his newest captives. Barius was standing with Darnak, and behind them, Rysland had taken their weapons and watched the proceedings with a smile. Even Jig could see that, unlike the others, Rysland was no prisoner.
Ah, your friends have returned. I was telling your friends about my collection of chamber pots. So many adventurers bring their own. That way they don't leave as much of a trail to follow. I have 14 now that I've claimed Barius' port as well. Ingenious the way the lid twists into place so perfectly. I'd guess an elven craftsmanship went into this beauty.
Strahm picked up the gold-trimmed chamber pot, which looked like a porcelain bead in his claws.
I'll have one of my children clean it out. The flowers can always use an extra bit of fertilizer. Not terribly decorative, though. No artistic style. See that blue pot on the third shelf? That belonged to a barbarian lord named Terranor.
The indicated pot was covered in cloisonné images of huge muscular men and women, their hands raised high as if they were trying to raise the sky. The wide-rimmed top appeared to be cushioned in leather and trimmed with red jewels. It suddenly occurred to Jig that, were the owner to sit on the leather, the men and women would appear to hold him up. The chamber pot was easily one of the tackiest things he had ever seen, and he felt a wash of pity for those poor bearers of barbarian buttocks.
Very nice. Now that our companion has been returned, perhaps you can get on with that matter of our deaths.
Oh, but I so rarely have company. Most people never make it past the necromancer, even if they find him. I had such a good time watching you figure that out.
Strahm tilted his head toward two small pools that Jig hadn't seen before. No more than puddles a little way from shore, a short wall of clear glass bricks surrounded and protected each one. The surfaces were so still it was like looking at a pair of mirrors. Instead of reflecting Strahm's muscular bulk, Jig saw a whirling pillar of water at the center of an empty room when he studied the nearest pool. A small corpse lay to one side, next to an enormous throne. The necromancer's room. He wondered how the magic could show so much detail when the throne room itself was dark. Flecks of color sparkled across both pools, and finally Jig understood the purpose for those two decorative ceilings in the shiny room and the necromancer's throne room. Straum had been watching them, probably since that first confrontation where Jig betrayed his captain. While Jig wrestled with a new wave of fear, Straum gestured to a wall full of lanterns.
See that one, with the handle shaped like a naked eight-armed woman? That belonged to Eric the Eunuch. He used to be a slave of some Eastern Emperor. Once he built a name for himself, he had everything he owned redesigned with a kind of melon-breasted naked woman motif. Personally, I think it's a blatant example of overcompensating. Tell me, do women of such proportions truly exist among you people? If so, are they able to walk upright like the rest of your species?
And where in your fine collection do you keep the Rod of Creation, O Great Worm?
Therein lies Elnoraine's greatest joke. 'Twas a joke played as much on you as on me. I don't have it.
No! You're the Guardian! You must have it! This is a trick! You seek to gull me!
No trick, brother. Elnoraine had no choice, you see. The Rod needed to be safe from even the most powerful adventurers. So his first step was to trap the most powerful creature he could find and imprison him here, at the heart of the mountain. In thousands of years, no party has survived an encounter with Straum. Elnoraine knew this would happen. He predicted the tales of wealth, the fame that would draw adventurers from around the world in search of the Rod, all of them intent on battling their way here. Many die before they reach this point. Others flee after a few encounters. A fortunate few live long enough to again see the light of the sun.
They see the sunlight. I've been trapped here alone for so long I cannot remember what it feels like to be free. I can create an entire world of illusion, but I can't break these walls. I could grind an ordinary mountain to dust and scatter it on the wind, but Elnoraine, damn him to the lowest pit in Shadow Elves' icy hell, used the Rod to form these caverns and tunnels. Rod-created rock resists lesser magic, including my own. Only the Rod can free me.
That is why Elnoraine couldn't leave the Rod here. Straum, being a created creature, could not use it himself. But like all dragons, Straum collects followers. Ogres, trolls, and other creatures you haven't yet seen. One of them could have used the Rod, either to free the dragon or for their own use. It had to be hidden, but hidden so well that nobody would ever be able to use it.
Why not encase it in the mountain? Why all this nonsense with the tunnels and the monsters? He had to know that would bring adventurers like beggars converging on a feast.
The Rod's magic is like a living thing. Left alone, its magic would have seeped into the mountain itself. The effects could be unfortunate. It had to be left somewhere those effects would go unnoticed.
If I had the Rod, I would give it to you with my blessing and send you on your way. I would give you all of my gold, every treasure I own, if you only used the Rod to release me. Do you know how bloody bored I've been? I tried talking to the other creatures for a while, but the ogres talk about nothing but fighting and food. And as for the trolls, they kept trying to steal from me, and I grew tired of disintegrating them. The smell of burned troll is by far one of the most nauseating scents in the world. I taught myself magic from the spell books I collected. The trick was to kill the wizards without damaging their books. A difficult trick, since your races use such flammable materials for books. Though there was one fellow, a bright young lad, who had his spells engraved on brass plates. Heavy book, but it survived just fine. That killed a century or two. But all too soon, I was better at magic than the wizards who approached me, and the fun began to wane. And then I created my children.
The dragon-like creature that had captured Jig and Rihanna stepped forward. Head raised, it seemed to preen before Straum's proud gaze.
Your children? Don't tell me you've got a lady dragon hidden away in that lake.
Oh, if only there were. I haven't flown a mating dance in 5,212 years. While I may have forgotten most of the surface world, I still remember the scrape of scales against scales, the lashing of tails, the twining of necks. Ugh.
Straum's scales puffed out, turning him a darker bronze. Jig was thankful that the lake concealed the dragon's lower body. This adventure had given him nightmares enough already without the extra fuel of an aroused dragon.
No, I used magic to create them. They're fairly intelligent, stronger than anything else down here, and excellent company. Their only flaws are arrogance and a powerful loyalty to one another that tends to override their common sense. You were tracking this one back to his lair, Barrys. Had your brother not diverted your party, you would have been slaughtered the moment you threatened his offspring.
Which meant that, by diverting them here, Risland had saved their lives. Jig glanced at Barrys. Taken aback, the prince said nothing. The stoniness of his face as he studied Risland was an expression Jig had come to recognize. It was the expression Barrys wore when he had made a mistake, but wasn't yet willing to admit it.
Yes, my children are a clear improvement over the low creatures Elnorane abandoned me with. Goblins, ogres, trolls, worthless creatures. But I'm afraid that even my children have their flaws. See, in order to keep them interesting, I had to give them a bit of independence. Sadly, it goes to their heads from time to time. This one plans to bring me a poisoned deer and take my place as ruler.
Before anyone could move, Straum's jaws closed over its head. The headless body crumpled. Jig began to shake. For all Straum's bulk, he had moved faster than any creature Jig had ever seen.
He'll not get any more ideas into his head. That was a joke. Oh, well. I can read their minds, you see. I never mentioned that detail to them. I fear they might react badly.
How did my brother know where that thing was going?
There are many ways to grow in the magical arts. I went off alone to seek a teacher, someone who could show me real power. I sent my spirit questing for the most powerful wizard around. I found Straum.
Novices do that from time to time. Foolish, really. There's a shock when two spirits touch. I understand they seek quick power, but to seek that power for me is like a small child who stands in front of a charging stallion hoping for a ride. Fortunately, this stallion decided not to trample your brother.
My master had grown bored once again. He offered me a deal. He would give me magic that the most powerful warlock might envy.
Magic, yes, but power was another matter. No matter how stubborn he might be, Risland's power was limited. Every time he overextended himself, he drew on my strength to help him. I'm afraid it was too much for his poor mind. Like a weak branch beneath winter snow, it snapped. What could I do but replace it with my own? I locked him away in his own mind so he wouldn't cause any more harm. Otherwise, he could have injured himself in his greed.
You used him, you bloody oversized snake! You killed him! Where's my club? Earthmaker, help me! I'll crack you open like a walnut, you damn dragon!
Darnak kicked the corpse out of the way as he stormed towards Straum. Straum's tongue flicked out. It slapped Darnak in the face, knocking him to the sand.
I warned Risland, but he accepted both the terms of my agreement and the risk it would involve.
What were the terms?
I can't send anyone in search of the rod. Most are too stupid, and my own children might attempt to betray me. I've attempted to create mindless creatures I could use as puppets, but they lack the wit to find the rod. That was why I created the Necromancer's Fountain. A simple warlock used to control the tunnels. I thought I could animate his corpse and use that in my search. I failed. The upper levels are too alien to me, and I could not find what I needed. I required someone who would give me control, but who retained a spark of intelligence. Someone who might discover where Elnorain hid the rod. I found Risland. In exchange for my power, he offered to bring me a group of adventurers who could retrieve the Rod of Creation and set me free.
Jig had never noticed the smell of home before. Like the smell of his own sweat, it was simply there. But as he crouched low against a wall, listening to the growls and curses up the tunnel, he found himself smiling at the familiar odors. The earthiness of the carrion worm trails, the distant smoke of cooking meat, the moist, fishy smell of the lake. It all blended together to create home. Rihanna sat opposite Jig, her back against the wall in an almost identical position of boredom.
That's another one down.
How long do you think it'll take?
Rihanna peeked around the bend and turned back to Jig.
Looks like at least 5 or 6 more cats. How many do the hobgoblins have?
I've never tried to count them.
Jig leaned his head against the rock and closed his eyes. For the past 2 days, they had searched every alcove, room, and corridor, but the rod was nowhere to be found.
I almost feel sorry for them.
Why?
Raislinn.
Oh.
The wizard hadn't spoken since they left Straum's lair, except to cast the occasional spell. A few bolts of fire had scared away the giant bats on the bridge. He had also incinerated a swarm of rats they found in one of the alcoves in the hallway. Jig didn't know how much power Raislinn had at his disposal, but if he could draw energy from a 5,000-year-old dragon, he probably wouldn't dry up anytime soon. Jig crawled back to take another look. Four cats lay dead, two from Raislinn's magic, and the others from more mundane wounds. The corpses didn't seem to deter the other cats. Only a narrow bottleneck in the tunnel kept them from charging as a pack. Rihanna scooted closer to Jig's side.
Do you know where the rod is?
No.
In the past few days, everyone had pulled Jig aside to ask if he knew the rod's hiding place. Varius had threatened to torture him. Darnak hinted that helping to find the rod might be Jig's only hope of getting through this alive. As for Raislinn, when he asked about the rod, Jig had sensed Straum watching him from behind that glowing gaze. Jig hadn't been able to think of anything except Straum's terrible jaws closing over the helpless dragon child. Jig closed his eyes. Although it felt good to be home, everything seemed strange as well, like the smells. He never would have noticed them before. The tunnels themselves felt smaller, too. Jig remembered Straum's description of the rod. A seemingly innocent wooden rod, wide as a human's thumb and a little over 3 feet long. In other words, a stick. Magic wouldn't detect it, and the emanations of power would appear natural to those around it, since their wills would shape the way that power manifested. Basically, the thing was next to invisible. Jig looked around the bend. The tide had turned. The rest of the pack had finally seen enough. As one, they turned and fled.
Come on, then! We'll rout the mangy furballs all the way back to their masters!
Varius raced off to Darnak, his long stride helping him close the distance. Raislinn trailed behind them.
Come on.
Jig hesitated as he thought about the plan Varius had thought up. They intended to use Raislinn's magic and their own considerable fighting skill until every last hobgoblin died or surrendered. Which sounded fine to Jig. The only question was how long it would take. Hundreds of hobgoblins lived down that tunnel, and they wouldn't simply line up in a neat single-file line to die. In true hobgoblin style, they would set traps, attempt ambushes, and terrorize the tunnel cats into another attack. But in the end, whether by Barius's sword or Raislinn's mystic fire, they would die. Like goblins, the hobgoblins always lost to the heroes. Unfair as it seemed to Jig, Barius and the others were the heroes. Jig stopped.
If the hobgoblins don't have the rod, what will happen next?
Lantern light faded behind him as he moved toward the right branch of the tunnel.
Where are you going?
Jig ignored Rihanna. He knew what would happen if the adventurers didn't find the rod. Once they slaughtered the hobgoblins, the only place left to search would be the goblin lair. Jig stopped to catch his breath. He could see the red flicker of torches up ahead. A part of Jig wanted to run past the guards and into the main cavern, to curl up in his corner and forget about everything. He could lie about what had happened, say the surface dwellers had used magic to make him betray his captain. The next time they chose him for patrol, he would think of some excuse to stay at home. So what if they branded him a coward? At least he could live the rest of his life without having to see another dragon or adventurer. Except that he knew it wouldn't work that way. If he was lucky, one day might go by before Barius brought the others here. Maybe Jig could convince the goblins to negotiate, give Barius permission to search for the rod. But he knew it wouldn't work. Barius wanted bloodshed as much as any goblin. Nor would the goblins take kindly to surface dwellers scrounging through their homes. Sooner or later, one of them would try to put a knife in someone's back. On Jig's shoulder, Smudge waved his forelegs in excitement. He recognized these tunnels and knew they had come home. He couldn't understand that Jig might be killed as soon as one of the guards spotted him.
So why did I come back? Why not stay with the others? At least that way, when they kill the goblins, they might let me live.
If Jig was here when Barius arrived, they would kill him without a second thought. They probably wouldn't even know it was him. All goblins looked alike, after all.
Shadowstar, I could use a little help down here. How am I supposed to survive what's coming?
If I think of something, I'll let you know.
Not even a god could think up a way out of this. In the past few days, Jig had come within inches of being eaten, drowned, poisoned, zombified, ripped apart, and if you included having to live on bread, starving to death. He could be an entire poem all by himself. The 100 Deaths of Jig the Goblin. When Rihanna caught up, Jig pointed down the tunnel.
Keep going. You should reach the way out in a little under an hour.
I can't.
Why not?
I'd have to go through that room with a glass ceiling. Strom would see me. If he realized I was trying to escape, he might think I had the rod. And he can talk to Riceland.
Jig nodded. She was right. Riceland would be after her in a heartbeat. Then another thought occurred to him.
They might already be after us. They probably think we know where the rod is, which means they won't bother with the hobgoblins. They'll come as soon as they realize we're missing. Come on!
Straightening his shoulders, Jig walked past the goblin marker and into the tunnel. Rihanna followed, knife in hand.
What are we doing?
Jig didn't get to answer. Up ahead, he spotted the two guards. One carried an old spear, the other a club. Jig didn't break stride.
Jig, is that you? What are you doing out there?
You're in trouble. We hear you killed Porak.
Oh, who's the elf? Did you bring her back as a gift for Porak's friends? Hmm?
Wait! She was with the surface dwellers. We're going to see the chief.
You can't?
Jig walked right past them, motioning for Rihanna to follow.
Wait!
Jig glanced back to see the guard's spear leveled at his back.
I don't know if we should let her in there with you. She's got a knife, you know.
She's with me. The other adventurers will be here soon. You should worry about them instead.
Porak's friends are mean, and they'll have me head if they find out I let you live. Besides, we haven't had elf meat in months.
He jabbed his spear in Rihanna's direction, forcing her to hop back. Jig nodded. He should have known it wouldn't work, so he would have to do this the hard way. He stepped closer to the guard, who frowned. Jig had again done something unexpected. He drew his sword. The guard tried to swing his spear, but Jig was too close. The shaft bounced off his shoulder. Jig lunged, his sword biting into the guard's stomach. He pulled the sword free. Before the other guard had figured out what was happening, Jig pointed his sword at him.
I told you, we need to see the chief!
But...
The guard glanced at his bleeding companion. He took a step back, and the tip of Jig's sword followed him.
Right. Sorry about that.
Jig nodded and lowered his sword. He turned to Rihanna.
Come on!
Jig led them down the tunnel toward the main cavern. For now, getting past the guards had been the easy part. Getting past the hundreds of goblins they were sure to encounter next would be a much larger challenge. Apparently, Rihanna was having similar thoughts. As they neared the jagged entrance, she turned to Jig.
Do you have a plan? Or is this just another way to commit suicide?
Suicide. Come on!
If this doesn't work, I'm going to make sure you die with me.
If this doesn't work, I'm sure I will.
They walked into the room. The goblins stared at Jig and Rihanna. At any moment, someone would cry out and send the cavern into total chaos. Jig wanted to make sure that someone was him.
Adventurers! They're attacking the guards! Where's the chief? I have a deserter from that party who can help!
What'd you say?
Jig had forgotten Rihanna didn't speak goblin.
I told them the adventurers were coming and you were going to help us.
Oh. They've rallied the hobgoblins and the tunnel cats! They're coming to steal your women and children!
And our food!
No! Goblins everywhere scrambled for weapons or ran deeper into the warrens to hide. More importantly, nobody had tried to kill Jig or Rihanna. The chief had a large room behind the kitchen so that he could eat whenever he felt like it.
Come on!
Jig struggled through the crowd of goblins toward the far side of the cavern. Rihanna followed close behind. Strong fingers grabbed Jig's wrist.
How do we know this isn't a trick?
The other goblin had Jig's sword arm, and his fangs were almost an inch longer than Jig's. The goblin's eyes widened. He looked down. Following his gaze, Jig saw a dagger sticking out of his side.
You blindsided him.
I'm a thief. We're sneaky that way.
A few other goblins had seen what happened, and Jig's stomach tightened as a crowd began to form around him and Rihanna. They were close to the kitchen. All he needed was a few minutes with the chief. After that, Jig would probably die, and Rihanna would go into the pot, but at least he would have warned them about Barius and the others. He pulled out his sword. Goblins fell back, startled and uncertain. Jig dashed through the gap and into the kitchen, Rihanna stepping on his heels as she followed him. Golaka scowled at Jig as he entered. Nobody followed. Few goblins dared intrude when Golaka was cooking, which was most of the time. Golaka the chef was the largest goblin Jig had ever known. While not quite as tall as the average hobgoblin, she easily surpassed them in terms of bulk. The goblins liked to joke that you wouldn't be able to tell Golaka from her cauldron if it weren't for the fact that she never stopped complaining. Jig figured her size was an occupational hazard. How could you spend day after day manning the kitchen without snacking a bit? But Golaka was as much muscle as fat.
What are you doing, barging in like that? It's another hour before dinner.
Golaka pulled out her stirring spoon and shook it at Jig like a broadsword.
Jig, isn't it? Are you the one causing all that commotion? And what's this morsel here? She's a skinny one, isn't she? Couldn't find anyone with more meat on her bones, I suppose.
Jig gave quick thanks to Timulus Shadowstar that Rihanna couldn't understand Goblin.
Golaka, where's the chief?
Dead. He went looking for those adventurers and ran into a hobgoblin ambush. Seems there's been all sorts of excitement in these past few days. Means everyone will be all stirred up, no doubt. Fighting over who gets to be the new chief and all that nonsense. Long as I can remember, it's always the same. Adventurers come in and cause trouble. Bunch of young goblins run out and get themselves killed. Another patrol goes out and ambushes the adventurers. I end up with a few more bodies for the pot and a dozen less mouths to feed. At least they'll bring in some wood for the fire, a few arrows, maybe an axe handle or something. Haven't had any new wood in almost a month since that hobgoblin trader slipped and fell on me carving knife. That'll teach those hobgoblins to get fresh with me.
The emanations of the rod would appear natural, shaped by the wills of those around it. Golaka, have you ever run out of wood for the fire or food for the cauldron?
Course not! Though why you young know-it-alls can't bring me a fresh human from time to time is beyond me.
Golaka had run the kitchen for as long as Jig could remember. Older goblins would sometimes tell stories about meals she had made when they were children. Goblins rarely died of old age, a sad fact Jig had never before stopped to consider. So nobody really knew how long a goblin could expect to live. But surely Golaka had long ago exceeded her lifespan. Jig stared at her with such intensity that she actually stopped in mid-rant, an occurrence unheard of in goblin history.
What's the matter? I suddenly turned beautiful or something. Not nice to stare, Jig. And I'm afraid you're a bit too young for me. Now get on!
She took her stirring spoon and smacked him on the arm, splashing broth onto his stomach. Jig ignored the burning broth as he stared at the spoon. The brass head topped a wooden handle, a simple, unadorned wooden handle, about a yard long.
What is it, Jig?
Rihanna followed his stare. She had reached the same conclusion. They had found the Rod of Creation. Jig snatched for the rod. Golaka stepped back. The heavy spoon crashed onto Jig's head as he stumbled past. He staggered, white spots floating across his vision.
Get out of here and let me work, you stupid kid. Nobody samples the food before mealtime, not even the chief.
You said the chief was dead.
That's right, and unless you want to join him, you'll keep your grimy claws to yourself.
Jig leaned against a wall. He could leave Golaka and the rod in peace, When Barius and the others got here, she would pummel them with the rod, throw in a tongue lashing to make them sorry they ever saw a goblin, and send them on their way. If they protested, well, Golaka could always use more meat for the pot. Yes, that would be much easier. Rihanna slipped close to his side.
Jig, are you okay?
Yes.
Good. Then let's kill her and get out of here.
Rihanna leaped toward Golaka, sword flashing in the torchlight. Jig slapped at his waist. Rihanna had stolen his sword. His annoyance was nothing next to Golaka's.
Pull a knife on me, will you?
Golaka dodged backward and rushed for her butchering table. For all her bulk, she moved as fast as any adventurer. Grabbing a knife in each hand, she spun to face Rihanna.
You're too small for a meal, but I can make a mean dessert with elf liver and sweet root.
Rihanna scurried away from a vicious combination of thrusts and swipes.
Hurry, Jig!
Huh?
Rihanna pointed at the cauldron. That almost cost her a hand as Golaka chopped at her sword wrist, but Jig understood. Sticking out at an angle from the top of the pot, the rod of creation was unguarded. While Rihanna tried to retreat without taking a knife in the back, Jig grabbed the rod and pulled it out of the cauldron. The metal bowl on the end was heavier than he expected, but the rod itself felt like any other stick. Years of handling had smoothed and darkened the wood, turning it a deep brown.
Got it!
Mom!